Good evening, everyone. Let the record indicate it is 6 p.m. and the Finance Committee is called to order. First order of business is PCR 113-19, a resolution regarding a five-year plan. I need to have a motion to move it to the floor for discussion.
Motion moved to the floor for discussion.
Seconded.
We have a motion to move to the floor for discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. I need a motion to close the Finance Committee meeting at 6:01. Finance is closed at 6:01.
Council will come to order and the clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Carolla?
Here.
Mr. Corley? Mr. Howe?
Here.
Mr. Ladson?
Here.
Mr. McAllister?
Here.
Mr. Mary Roy?
Yeah.
Mr. Ritz?
Here.
Mr. Snappy?
Here.
Ms. Trapp?
Here.
If Councilman Ricks could lead us in the salute to the flag.
Say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets' red glare, the balls bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled
If the record could reflect that Councilman Corley is in attendance. The first item on the agenda is a public hearing on the presentation on a five-year financial plan projection and report by Markham LLP Could I have a motion to open the public hearing? Seconded by Councilwoman Travis, Councilman McAllister. Okay, before we start, I just wanted to thank everybody for coming here this evening. As you will recall, this item was on the council agenda, and members of the city council had suggested, and members of the public, that we have a special council meeting. So as not to delay what we do in the committee. So we're here tonight. Markham is here. It's the first time that we've had a presentation that I've been on the council regarding a five-year plan. I think the last time that a five-year plan was done was in 2013. This is Markham's projections of what it could look like. This is not any administration's projections as to what it could look like. And I'll let Kyle O'Connor from Markham open his presentation, and I'll move to the audience so I could see too. I just wanted to say that one of the key aspects of a five-year plan, what we're talking about are what the costs are in the future. And I think Kyle's going to go over his assumptions with everyone, but I like to refer to this as the vanilla plan. This doesn't have any increases for buildings, any increases for new trucks, any increases for bonding for schools. It's just if we continue forward. I think it's an important barometer, if you will, as to what we do in the future when we take votes on different issues. And I think it'll give us a good opportunity to look at what our priorities are. With that said, does anybody have any statements or anything they want to make before we start? If not, if you could just introduce yourself for the record, and then I'll move around so I can see you also.
Hello. Oh, great. Good evening, everybody. My name is Kyle Connors. I'm with Markham LLP. If you want a copy of the slides that we're going to go through, there's packets down here. It might be a little bit easier to follow along, especially as we get into the financial aspects of the five-year plan. So the purpose of this evening is to help the City Council and the citizens understand and analyze the city's fiscal health. And we're going to do this two ways. We're going to consider the ramifications of long-term effects on the city, and we're also going to look at the short-term. And I think it's important that we view this two ways. I want to have everyone look at our five-year forecast that we've put together and go over the assumptions and give an understanding of where our figures come from. And subsequent to that, I want to go through the last 5 years and kind of show you how Warwick got to the position that it's in these past 5 years. So we're going to look at long-term, short-term, and then we're going to look to the future and then look how to see how we got there. So when we put our five-year forecast together, there's some important assumptions that we made. And the first relates to salaries, where we're anticipating a 2.75% salary increase across the board. So that includes municipal, police, fire, school as well. So 2.75% in salary increases, 2% in commodities, 2.5% in services, 7.27% increase in healthcare costs. And we got that by looking at the last 5 years dating back to 2014. On average, healthcare for the city of Warwick has increased at 7.27%. I know when the actuary was here a couple weeks ago, he gave you a range of 8 trending down to 5. But if we look just at the last 5 years, not necessarily into the future, we landed at 7.25. And your pension increases are taken from the actuarial valuations that we receive from your actuaries. It's also important to note that we did increase the asphalt line, which was decreased in the 2020 budget. It was decreased to 1.5 from 4.5. We saw it probably more reasonable that costs would come in at $2.5 million as opposed to the 1.5 that's currently in the 2020 budget. Two other assumptions that are very important is that, as Councilman Merola said, we're not adding any new programs or services to the city that weren't already in the 2020 budget. So there's no new projects, no new capital bonds or anything. But even more importantly, it assumes that there are no cuts being made to the services that are already in the 2020 budget. A lot of times, municipality may be facing a deficit, and they may say, okay, you know, this year we're not going to spend $2.5 million in asphalt and paving. We're going to decrease that. Well, we're not going to, you know, I know there was a lot of talk about school sports in Warwick, and that was almost an issue where those weren't funded. So the programs that are in the 2020 budget, we're assuming those are going to continue moving forward. So if we do that and we make those assumptions, I apologize if that's a little hard to read. There are physical copies if you need it. What we end up with is operating expenditures in 2021 of $329 million. The city has a capital budget for the city and for the school, which you can see right below that. And then we took our lease figures and our bond figures out of the June 30, 2018 financial statements. So these lease increases and the $40 million school bond issuance occurred after June 30, 2018. So it's important that we recognize those costs as well. What that leads us to is an increase over 2020 of about $10.7 million. With a maximum tax increase of about $8.9 million and an increase in licenses and fees of about $579,000, that gives us revenue of about $9.4 million or so. But what's important to note is that the city's 2020 budget had a $3.5 million structural deficit, which means when the budget was put together, expenditures were higher than the revenues by $3.5 million, anticipating that you would be using some of your rainy day fund to cover that. That $3.5 million is unsustainable over the course of, you know, 5-10 years. You can't keep spending $3.5 million every year, or else you run out of money. So we're anticipating that you're going to need to raise an additional $3.5 million to cover the structural deficit. With those assumptions being made, we are forecasting a gap in 2021 of just under $4.8 million. And that represents 1.5% of your entire budget. This also only factors in your payment that you've been making for your OPEB on an annual basis, which is pay as you go, of about $12 million. If we were to include the full ARC, as reported by the actuary that you had in last week, your forecasted gap would be about $28 million. You're putting 12 in now. The actuary said in order to fund it over the course of 30 years, you should be putting in 35. So at the rate things are going, about 4.8. If you were to pay the full OPEB ARC, it would be about $28 million just for fiscal 21. If we continue this trend over the course of 5 years, 2021 through 2025, what we have anticipated is a forecasted gap in total of about $12.8 million. And that's only if you're paying your OPEB pay as you go. It's not factoring in the ARC. If we did factor in the ARC, it would be about $127.8 million worth of gap. So I know that there will be a lot of questions on this, which we will be happy to answer to the best of our ability for you. But this is what we're anticipating for the next 5 years moving forward, provided that program services aren't taken out of the budget. Now, I know that can be kind of challenging to understand if you're someone who's not working in municipal auditing, if you're not looking at these financial statements, which are 200 pages long, and trying to understand what they mean. So what we're going to do is kind of give you an overlay of some of the key metrics that we use to measure municipalities when we give our grading system. And while we do that, I want to try to equate it to a household with a $75,000 annual income. You've got a car loan of maybe 15 grand, so you own some assets. Maybe you own a home, and your credit card debt is roughly $240,000. That's sort of the best way for a citizen to kind of get an idea of how the city is working at the moment. So if you're a family of four living off of income of $75,000, your long-term focus may be saving money for your children to go to college. You may be saving for retirement or maintaining the home that you live in. And that's a long-term focus. For a municipality, a long-term focus is focusing on your infrastructure, which is making sure you have proper assets, buildings, schools, trucks, vehicles, making sure that they're in good shape. A short-term focus for a family would be paying your monthly mortgage, feeding your family, the things that are immediate. And when we look at the short-term focus for a municipality, we're not really looking at infrastructure or general obligation debt or OPEB or pension. We're mostly focusing on cash on hand and your ability to pay your bills, to pay salaries over the course of the next year, the short-term look. So over the course of the past 5 years, the city has, their liabilities have increased over their assets all 5 years. So basically you've run a deficit from a long-term perspective for the last 5 years. What does that mean for a family of four? That means at the end of every year for the last 5 years, your credit card debt is higher than it has been the year before. So if we were to look at this and measure it, going back to 2014, you can see that from 2014 to 2018, your long-term liabilities have exceeded your long-term assets. $17 million in 2014, your debt increased. $12 million in 2015, $43 million in 2016. All the way up to last year's financial statements where you'd see your long-term net position decreased by $22.8 million. So if we were to equate that to the credit card scenario, every year you've spent an additional $17,000, an additional $12,000, an additional $43,000, and you keep seeing the principal rise on your credit card balance all the way up to $240,000 at present. And the challenge with that is you've got $20,000 in the bank, which is great because you have some savings, but it's significantly less than what you have on your credit card. And a good portion of what makes up that debt for the city is the net pension liability and the net OPEB liability. So if we were to look at dating back to 2014, it looks like your debt exceeds your assets by about $65 million, $64.8. But what's important to note is that in 2015, your pension liability, which had always existed in the notes to your financial statements, was actually put on the balance sheet of your financial statements. In 2017, the same thing occurred for your retiree health care plan, which again was in the notes to the financial statements, but it hadn't been put on the balance sheet yet. So in 2017, it hit the balance sheet. And you can see the significant rise between 2014 and 2015 for your net pension liability in your overall debt. And the same for retiree health care in 2017. The best way I can explain that to you is that you're going to a bank and you're trying to take out a loan, and they ask what credit cards you have, and you give them your credit card debt. Well, in 2015 and in 2017, you finally showed the bank old credit cards. You knew you had them, but you've never reported them on your balance sheet. And so that's why there's such a significant increase. As it relates to your enterprise funds, specifically your water and your sewer fund, these have historically raised enough fees to cover their costs. So that means your water bill has been relatively consistent over the past 5 years. However, the infrastructure that gets the water to you needs significant repairs, and your rate is going to increase. My understanding is that the water director noted that they need about $100 million in infrastructure in order to fix the current problem. So you're going to feel that burden on your utility rates. It's also important to note that if you were to look in the financial statements, the water fund has a due to what I believe to be the general fund of about $7.2 million. And if you look at the water fund also, it has a negative net position. So basically, if the general fund were to say, we need that $7.2 million, the water fund wouldn't be able to give it to them. And that's going to be important to note when we go and look at our a rainy day fund in a few moments here. So if we look at the short-term focus, which is your general fund and the undesignated fund balance, this is the amount of money that is in that you've got in the bank in order to cover your mortgage costs and in order to cover the interest on your credit card. So if you've got $20,000 in the bank, you're using that to cover your mortgage, you're using it to cover your interest, but at the same time, you're still using that credit card on the side. So the principal balance on the credit card is getting higher and higher, which means your principal payments are going to increase, your interest payments are going to increase, and eventually you're going to get to a point where the $20,000 you have in the bank isn't going to be able to cover the cost of the principal and the interest on the credit card. So if we go to look at your short-term, the city's short-term savings, you've got in June 30th, 2018, you've got $22.6 million worth of undesignated fund balance. And why I think it's important to note that the water fund owes the general fund $7.2 million, potentially. I'm not your auditors, so I haven't had an opportunity to, I've only had an opportunity to read the financial statements, but it appears that that's the case. Your undesignated fund balance could potentially be overstated by about $7.2 million in fund balance that should be considered non-spendable. So that's something you may want to ask your audit firm about. But with $22.6 million in fund balance, that's roughly 8.6% of your general fund's fund expenditures. So on a ratio that we typically see between 8 and 16%, the city is on the lower end of that. What does that mean? That means if you're a family living off an income, if you lost your job, you'd have enough money in the savings banks to cover your costs for about 2 months worth of mortgage and principal and interest. As we look towards your infrastructure, your governmental infrastructure, which excludes your water and your sewer, stands at about $400 million, of which $300 million is currently depreciated. That means on average, your capital assets have reached 75% of their useful lives. That's your schools, that's your municipal buildings, trucks, equipment. Those all fall under your capital assets. 75% is a pretty significant number. So we assess that as the range of yellow, where you're trending toward fully depreciated assets. What does that mean to a family? Well, that means your roof is 20 years old, your boiler's 30 years old, your car has 175,000 miles, and your furnace needs to be replaced. You keep saying every year that you're going to start saving for it next year, but you never do. And this ties directly into your general obligation debt. So there's two types of debt. You've got your general obligation debt, which you can use to cover the cost of infrastructure, and you've got your credit card debt, which is basically your pension and your OPEB debt. Well, when we look at your debt service as a percentage of your total general fund expenditures, it's pretty low. That means you have the capacity to go out and probably take out significant amount of general obligation bonds in order to fix the roof, in order to fix the boiler, in order to to fix or to buy a new car. So you have the capacity to take on new debt. And we've seen it with the rating agencies. They came out and said you had a good rating. They'd be more than happy to lend the city money. But if you look at this from the perspective of a family, you've got $240,000 worth of credit card debt, and the bank is happy to give you a home equity line that's going to cover $500,000. So you can do all those things, you can fix all of those problems that you want to. But at the end, your income isn't going to change. Your principal and your interest payments on the home equity line are going to increase, and you're still going to have your $240,000 in credit card debt. So while they're letting you have the money, at some point you do have to pay it back. So I want to get into the pension and the OPEB plans a little bit here. Those are the two significant liabilities that are driving your credit card debt, so to speak. So your pension plans, you've got six pension plans, four of which are funded at better than 75%, but when you combine them all, they're funded at 54%, leaving you with a net pension liability of $453 million. And you're anticipating that the assets you have in those plans, which are significant, are going to work at 6.9% over the course of the next 20 years. So that's a relatively significant number. I think it's a tick under what the state uses at 7%. So we're assuming a good economy here. Overall, 54% of your pension plans funded is well below what the state says is a well-funded plan at 80%. But it's not terrible until you combine it with your OPEB plan, which currently has no assets associated with it. As I noted at the beginning of the presentation, your city and your school plans are being funded on pay-as-you-go. So you're not building up any assets to cover any future liabilities. Your expenditures, as it relates to OPEB, are approximately $12 million a year at the pay-as-you-go. And the actuary said that you need to put in about $34 to $35 million a year over the next 30 years in order to fully fund your plan. Basically, what that means for the average family is that at the rate you're currently spending, your interest payments are going up 7% per year, and you're never reducing your principal on your credit card. And as you can see here, there are two separate OPEB plans, one for the city and one for the school. The city's OPEB liability sits at $352 million, and the school's liability sits at $53 million, neither of which have any assets to support them in the future. You can see the school is significantly lower than the city's liability, and that's because individuals who are on that plan come off that plan at 65 and are on Medicare, whereas the city offers lifetime health insurance for retirees. So just getting back to our initial forecast, obviously these are inherently subjective and based off of the hypothetical assumptions that I had laid out in the beginning of the presentation. Your actual results will differ, and they could differ substantially based on whether programs are cut, based on the economy and what happens moving forward. And each budget preparation cycle is different. If you were to look back to 2018, the city was anticipating using $4 million worth of surplus. In 2019, they were anticipating using 3.8, and in 20, they were anticipating using 3.5. So each budget is different. We are just going off of the most recent information that we have available. So I guess we'll open it up to questions?
Thank you, Kyle. I also know I was going to ask about the school department. I think when we talked to them about giving them additional money in July, they said they were going to do a five-year plan and give that five-year plan to us. Do you know where they're at that point on their five-year plan and their projections?
I've only seen agendas discussing it. I haven't actually seen a five-year plan from the school.
Okay. Councilman Tanappi, I know you sit on one of those committees. Is that they're looking at... Do you know when they're looking at completing their five-year forecast?
I know it's actively being worked on. We actually have a meeting on it tomorrow. If I recall, and I might be off, I know the chair's here, the plan was to have it before December, if not by November, one of the two.
Thank you. I was just going to ask you a question on about page three.
Sure.
Your assumptions. You're assuming a salary increase at 2.75% across the board. How did you reach that number?
Based on historical trends.
Historical trend, okay. And the same is true with commodities, electricity, gas,
supplies.
Fuel, supplies.
Correct.
And that's really the cost of inflation.
Correct.
And then a 2.5% increase in services. How'd you get that number, and what's that for?
Yeah, all three of those numbers, I mean, you could increase them or decrease them however you wanted. That's just what we felt comfortable based off of historical data from the city's financial statements.
And obviously, if you move those numbers up or down, it changes the forecast of what you'd
Absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely. Yep.
Also, 7.27% increase in healthcare. How'd you get that percentage?
We took the increases dating back to 2014, and the average increase has been 7.27% over that period of time.
So I know, for example, the school department came and testified a few months ago and said they were looking for this year a 14% increase.
Yep.
But you didn't select a number like that. You went back and you averaged what everybody did over the last 5 years.
That's correct.
Okay. And the pension increases, did you make those up, or how did you get those numbers?
Those came directly from the actuarial valuations. You have an actuary who gives you a pension valuation every single year.
Those were the actuaries that came before us.
That's correct.
Yep. Not too long ago. I also wanted to talk to you about short-term versus long-term, because I think there's some confusion that goes on there. We've been talking about this problem, and I know that you had pointed out in particular, I forget what slide it was, that some of these costs were for the first time put on, I think it was slide 11, were first put on our balance sheet a few years back, even though there was an asterisk there. And that has to do with the government accounting board's recommendations as to how to...
More requirements than recommendations. They were always required to be disclosed in the notes to the financial statements, and what you would have seen historically on your balance sheet, for example, would be a net pension obligation, which is the amount that you've underfunded your ARC over the course of the life of your pension plan. The pension obligation and the OPEB obligation were significantly lower than what the true liability is, which is what you're seeing now on your financial statements.
So, short term, in July, this council will look at a budget. Are you saying we're not going to be able to pay our bills next year?
No, I think the short term focus is that you'll be able to, you know, pay your bills moving forward. How long that continues, based on the rise in your healthcare costs and whether or not you choose to invest in infrastructure to fix your buildings, will determine, you know, when it gets to a point where you may not be able to. And there's too many factors in the future to determine, you know, exactly when that year will be.
So the actuaries came before us a few weeks ago, and they told us that the plan that we have cannot be sustained. Eventually, we won't be able to pay these bills. The question I think everybody always asks is when? When is that going to hit? And I think the point, and I called it a vanilla presentation, but the point is that this council, the administration, the school department has to make choices because there's only so much revenue that you can bring in. So those choices mean cuts in services or programs or designs. And you might not see those to the average taxpayer or council person until something happens. So until a sewer line collapses, until, as Dan has come before us, a water main breaks, and you're struggling to pay that bill or to fix that infrastructure because we haven't been making the investments. I understand that the sewer and water may not be the best examples because they're quote-unquote self-sustaining because they bring in their own revenue. But they're not being repaired, and we guarantee those bonds, if you will, for those entities. And as ratepayers, we all pay for those services, whether they're in the form of taxes or they're not. At the end of the day, I think I've asked you this before. You're looking at, if you keep everything the same for next year, about how much increase? If you kept everything the same, did you say 10 or 11 million? In other words...
Oh, yes, yep. Sorry, I misunderstood your question. Roughly $10.7 million worth of increased expenditures.
And a maximum tax increase is around 8.2, 8.3. So the point is that we can do it. It's just we have to choose where we're going to make cuts or not provide money in a certain line item. I know recently there's been a little bit of confusion. With this bond rating and how bond rating, how bonding companies determine whether you can take out debt or not, take out more loans, more bonds. And they said, which is excellent, we have a AA bond rating. When I talked to the actuaries about it, I think you touched on it briefly tonight, which is if we do go out to bonding and how they determine that it's a AA bond rating is that they assume, and there was an asterisk in our actuarial reports, they assume that we're making the payments not only for pensions but for healthcare. And as you know, we're pay as you go. We're not paying the annual required contribution. If they were asked to assume that we weren't making those payments on those bonds, I would venture to guess that, and when I say the bonds, I meant to say the healthcare OPEB costs, I would venture to guess that the rating for every city and town in the United States, not just Warwick, would change. This is a problem that's not unique to Warwick. I think back on the fiscal crisis that happened in 2009 where the subprime mortgage collapse and people were evaluating bonds and debts for mortgages, and they were told that they were Class A and they weren't. I get nervous when I see what happens here, but also probably what's happening in every other city and town around the United States as far as how they're calculating, you know, the value of the ability to pay back. In other words, they don't tell us that we can pay They tell us what we need to pay, not whether we can afford to pay it. And obviously, we're not paying those debts, which is very concerning to me also. At the end of the day, you analogized to a household and to income. Is that the best analogy that you could come up with? Because we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars here. And you're talking about credit card debt that's unsecured. At some point in time, you pay that credit card debt if you're only paying interest only. And you would think that when you pay interest only on a credit card debt, that the principal on that credit card doesn't go up. But in our case, on the city side, the principal does go up because for the first time in the history of the city of Warwick, we have more retirees than we have active employees. So when the employees go on to that payroll system, even though we're making the interest-only payments for health care, that debt continues to grow, correct?
Correct.
Yep. And there are some assumptions, obviously, that the actuaries made with regard to how much health care is going to go up and how much we're going to contribute. And those numbers are not factored in. Those ARC payments are completely not factored in to your analysis because we're not making the ARC payments, correct?
Yep, correct. $12 million, whereas the ARC would be about $35 million.
So when you say we might need 10 or 11 and we could maybe, we'll do next year, we might cut something, that is also recognizing that we're on pay as you go with regard to healthcare and that we're not making any of the payments that we should be making for healthcare.
Correct. That's why we've got two separate lines, one for a forecasted gap based on max tax increases in our anticipated expenditures and a second line below it that shows you that same forecast if you were to be making your OPEB ARC payment.
So my issue with tonight anyway is we're not voting on anything tonight. This is just informational. People can ask questions. At the end of the day, that debt needs to be paid. And I don't know if people in the public, in collective bargaining units, in government, agree on where we are. Because we get a lot of mixed messages. If we don't agree on numbers, because numbers don't lie, and the actuaries, they give the reports every year on behalf of the administration. They don't give it on behalf of the council. If we don't know where we are, we can't agree on what we need to do to get to the next step to make sure that these unsustainable debts don't get us to the point where you can't pay them anymore. And that's the most disconcerting aspect of the presentation to me tonight is, do people believe where we are? Because if we don't believe where we are, then we can't fix it. And I hope the council appreciated the presentation. I know Councilman Ricks has a question.
At the assumption, excuse me, as I look at the assumptions, I see a number of very expensive items that the city simply doesn't have control over. While we may, in the long term, have some control over some of our health care or health insurance costs, that 7.27% increase, and correct me if I'm wrong, assuming that Warwick has the generally the same health care insurance coverage for its employees these last 5 years and not a massive swing in the number of employees, that 7.27% generally reflects health care inflation?
Correct, based off of, right.
Yeah.
It's the health care trend rate that your actuary described a couple weeks ago.
Thank you. And so while, you know, theoretically we can make changes to plans in future years through the collective bargaining process, the health care inflation, our assumption is that just as it didn't go away in the last 5 years, it's not going to go away in the next 5 years either.
Likely not.
And obviously the city has little control over the cost of commodities. Might be more, might be less. Similarly, relatively little control over the cost of services. So, and similarly, the pensions. But one item when, for this exercise of looking 5 years down the road and deciding on, okay, how are we going to figure out how to fund our priorities, would be contractual and otherwise outside of the collective bargaining units for management or other types of employees, the salary increases. And because that is such a large part of the budget, I'd be interested in knowing what would these numbers look like. I'm taking a look at page 5, where just looking at those top line numbers of the operating expenditures, it appears that our projection is showing roughly 3 to 4% increases, with the 4% being a maximum tax increase. And part of that is, well, that's that list of the five assumptions, one of them being a 2.75% salary increase across the board. And I'm curious, how would those top line numbers be affected if instead of 2.75%, it was, it doesn't do me much good to just throw out random numbers, but exactly how much of those overall increases are affected by the 2.75%? Say, what would 1.75% or 2.25% look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't have that information readily available in front of me, but I can provide the council with the ability to toggle through the assumptions, change them based on maybe what you think the assumption should be based, different than what we think, and then, you know, that will provide you with your answer.
Thank you. And just to be clear, I'm certainly not making any sort of suggestion that the current 2.75% salary increases that are in the collective bargaining agreements should be different from what they are, but simply to inform our discussion about these long-term costs, especially going down the road after the conclusion of the current contracts, as to how we can afford our priorities or otherwise try to avoid onerous tax increases that are either maximum tax increases or close to it. Thank you.
Councilman Corley.
Good evening. The GASB numbers, I understand it's the government accounting. I don't know what the S
standards
is.
Board. It's the governmental accounting standards board.
Government accounting standard board. And that board is not made of governmental figures, right?
I mean, I don't believe the Secretary of State sits on it, but I believe it's its own organization.
It is a group of accountants that come up with the figures that they need in order to deal with Wall Street pertaining to bonding. Is that a basic reason for their existence?
One of many.
They are not a board that tells municipalities how to govern cities and towns or states, right?
Certainly not.
And it's not a government agency, right?
I don't believe so. I believe that their focus is more on the presentation of your financial statements than it is how you run your municipality.
But the point of having the standards that they set are to be used when municipal bonding or is determined and for funding those types of activities?
To an extent, I suppose. I think their focus is more on the presentation of, for example, the pension and the OPEB liabilities that are shown in your financial statements, how those are generated.
Well, who are they showing them to?
So in order for an audit firm to issue your financial statements with a clean opinion, that means you don't have a qualified opinion in your report letter. You have to present the you have to present the financial statements in accordance with GASB standards. So that's what your audit firm was following.
I have a question concerning the page 17 of your presentation where you talk about the state says that a well-funded plan is 80% and above. Are you talking about the state of Rhode Island?
That's correct.
How many of the 39 municipalities meet that standard?
How many what?
There's 39 cities and towns in
yep.
Rhode Island.
How many of them meet the 80% standard?
Yes, do you know?
I don't know off the top of my head.
When we had first received the report relating to OPEB, the first term I was here, I was surprised at the numbers that were forecasted. And I went to the general treasurer, and I could not understand why the general treasurer had issued a report that had Warwick in the top 20% of cities and towns in Rhode Island financially. Can you explain how, with these numbers, a statement like that would be possible?
I don't know the context of the statement, or I don't know what they were comparing it to. So.
Okay. Well, how do we compare with the other cities and towns?
I only have the information in front of me for Warwick. But I don't know that a lot of other municipalities have.
I'm sorry, I did not hear you.
I don't know that a lot of other municipalities in the state of Rhode Island have $890 or $850 million worth of OPEB and pension liability.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that a lot of other municipalities in Rhode Island have $850 million worth of pension and OPEB liability on their books.
You don't know what any of the other municipalities have, isn't that correct?
Off the top of my head, I do not.
Oh, well, I understand, and that was not the purpose for you coming here, and I'm not saying that you should have that information. That is not...
I can certainly find it for you, though, at a later date.
I had another question, but it's escaped me. If it comes back, I'll raise my hand again. Thanks.
Councilman McAllister.
Good evening. Good evening, Kyle. Thanks for coming here tonight. I know we've met a couple of times to go over this in the last few months. But I just want to ask some framing questions first. When you're going over this, you said in earlier presentations that this is not a roadmap. This is projections on the assumptions that you have at the time of putting this together.
That's correct.
And a number of different things can change this overnight.
Absolutely.
One of the things that's not unique to Warwick now, if we talked about these governmental standards, now this number has always been there, as we know, but now we have to show on our balance sheet the net pension liabilities and the retirement health care costs on the balance sheets. But that's not just the city of Warwick. That is the across-the-board standard now.
Across the whole United States, yep, that's correct.
So I know, obviously, you can't speak for the entire United States, each city and town, but wouldn't the majority, now that we have to show this number, everyone's has gone up?
Absolutely.
A large number?
Yep.
So Warwick is not unique in that?
Absolutely correct.
Also, on the pay-as-you-go that the city of Warwick does, we had the actuary came here a couple weeks ago. He was from New York, and he mentioned the state of New York has a state law that you're not even allowed to pay, prepay the OPED.
That was the first time I'd heard that.
Yeah, so so is Warwick the only, so I would think, again, if that holds up, that every city and town in the state of New York would have these large OPED liabilities as they're doing pay-as-you-go.
If they offer the plan.
Correct. That, yeah, correct, if they offer a plan. In your knowledge, the rest of the state, is Warwick the only one who does pay-as-you-go, or are there other cities and towns to your knowledge?
The majority I've seen over the last 5 years are pay-as-you-go. It's only been until recently when the number's been put on the balance sheet where a lot of trust funds have been set up, most of which are funded somewhere between 5 and 10%.
So it's only almost recently that these trust funds have been set up, and it's going to be a huge number for everybody.
Yep.
Again, not unique to the city of Warwick, across the country.
Absolutely.
This is an issue. On the assumptions that you made for our presentation this evening, as you mentioned, it is not a roadmap. Things can change. I think recently we saw some news come out of the administration that there was a budget surplus, and after some expenses to the school department and some other things, we originally had budgeted to take out $2.4 million out of the rainy day fund, and now unaudited numbers, but the drafts that we've received may be closer to around $100,000, so that's a big swing right there of what is staying in the rainy day fund.
Okay.
How much in your presentation do we take out, do you project taking out of the rainy day fund each of the next 5 years?
So if we go back to our forecast here, our notion was that it wasn't sustainable to continue to take $3.5 million out of your rainy day fund every year. That would add up to $17.5 million worth of your rainy day fund through 2025. So in our projection, you're going to see that we're anticipating revenues are going to be generated, or expenses will be cut in order to make up for that $3.5 million so that you can keep your fund balance preserved at what it currently is at.
Okay, so it is used to do these projections here. You use $3.5 million coming out of the rainy day fund each year, but with cuts and what was the other thing?
So the 2020 budget has a structural deficit of $3.5 million, meaning the revenues are lower than the anticipated expenses by $3.5 million. As we move into 2021, we're anticipating the city is going to raise enough money or lower enough expenses in order to not take an additional $3.5 out every single year.
Okay. All right. And we spent a lot of time on the OPED, the healthcare. Because we are doing the pay-as-you-go. With the pensions here in the city of Warwick, that's more of a number that we can kind of drill down on. I believe the actuary mentioned that we have one really bad pension plan, Fire One, about 24% funded, obviously lumped in with the other ones that really brings down the overall average for the city for our pension plans. But he mentioned that there's only seven active people still paying in that plan, and there is a long-term plan. I guess we are in year 24 of a 40-year plan, schedule plan to pay off that, so that is being addressed at this time. That is the worst one.
The arc is being met.
The arc is being met.
And provided the economy does well, you're going to make interest off of your assets as well. But, you know, certainly a recession would change that. But you are meeting the arc in order to fund it. Mm-hmm.
And we are doing arc, we're doing projections of 6.9% return. That's a little lower than the state. Does the state, are they above 7?
Yeah, they were at 7.25, and I think either 2 years ago or a year ago, they dropped down to 7%.
Okay.
And you're using 6.9%.
And if we don't hit that 6.9%, if we're lower, obviously these numbers get a lot worse. And if you do better, they get if the economy goes better and we get better returns. We're using the 6.9%. In your opinion, is that kind of a conservative one, since it's a little bit lower than what the state does?
I would say it's on par with what we see with other municipalities.
Okay. All right.